If you've got your Bibles, let's turn to John chapter 11. John chapter 11. We're going to be considering the story of Lazarus this morning, Lazarus' death and resurrection. And we're setting it in the context of our study of emotionally healthy churches. You'll know if you've been coming along for the last few weeks, we've been studying a book by a man called Peter Cesario, which is entitled The Emotional Healthy Church. He wrote it about a decade ago. And since then, it's been turned into various Bible study groups and various work programs for individuals to go through. And we've been using it in our Sunday morning services to just process some of the issues. The premise of the book and the study is basically that emotional health and spiritual maturity are inseparable. It is not possible to be spiritually mature while remaining emotionally immature. I see Hannah, our artist in residence picture, has been stuck up on the wall over there. But if you look over at the iceberg, you'll see 10% is above the surface, 90% is below the surface. And some psychologists say this is a wee bit like us as human beings, that actually what we present to the world and what the world sees is actually the minority element within our lives, and that there is a vast ocean there of emotion and experiences and hurts and things that we're processing that are below the surface. And sometimes in terms of our Christian discipleship, we never address or touch on those areas. It becomes a purely cerebral exercise, Christianity. And so Peter Cesario is saying, we've got to engage with some of these things that are going on. And he provides a series of principles to help us work through, to look at some of these other areas. This morning I want to deal with the principle that we must embrace grieving and loss. Grieving and loss is very much part of our experience as human beings. I find this story in John chapter 11 a fascinating story, because it's one of these stories where you're prompted to ask, what is Jesus doing? You know, what is Jesus doing? And you'll see those questions are actually asked in the course of the narrative, where people are saying, Jesus, you could have been here. And we're actually told before the story passage that we read that Jesus knew Lazarus was dying, but he chose to stay behind where he was and not rush to Lazarus. He waited. And so you're sort of, Jesus, well, what on earth was all this about? And what John is trying to get over to us, apart from a prototype of Jesus' death and resurrection that's about to occur later on in the story, is he's trying to say that there is meaning and purpose in the brokenness of our human experience. That God is working things. And we have to understand something of that work of God. However, the experience is often that we have no idea what God is doing or why we're undergoing what God has behind what we are undergoing. And this story in John is really like that, because none of the characters really have any idea of what is happening. And for many of us, loss and the process of grieving is very like that, is that we have no clear picture. We have no sense of either why we're experiencing this, why we're feeling this, how to process this, how to deal with this. And that leads to a whole series of other issues like, who am I? I don't know who I am anymore. I've lost my points of reference. And this sense. So embracing grieving and loss is something that we all have to do. All relationships evolve. Children grow. We age. Things change. We miss how it used to be. I'm terrible for this. And I like things staying as they are. And see, as you get older, I like that more. It's strange, but it's true. And things change also because we experience loss because of choices that we make. And sometimes we make bad choices, sometimes we make wrong choices, and these cause a cascading effect. And suddenly we find ourselves with a whole bunch of regrets about decisions and choices that we made. And you sit there and think, if only I had bought in Docklands in 1980. And so you live with regrets. Sometimes the decisions and actions of others cause us to experience loss. One of the great failures, and we've touched on in the series, is the failure of family life. And the fact that fathers and mothers fail to maintain their contracts with their children. And the God-given contracts that God calls us to have with our children. And parents fail them. And often, what we should have received and should have had in terms of our families, we don't. And so we experience a loss and a grieving. I remember one of my daughter's boyfriends came to sit with us at Christmas, and we were having a Christmas meal. Every year we have a Christmas meal. We all have all the family around. We sit around, we eat, we chat, we fight, we do the things that you do at Christmas. And he sat there and he said, I have never, ever experienced anything like this in my life. You know, my family just have never done this. You know, I actually sit around the table and eat and chat. And that just seemed remarkable. And you thought, wow, there's something as simple as that. And again, yeah, the experience, I've missed out on something here. And so people have these experiences. Thing is, though, despite the pervasive nature of loss and grief, our culture resists it. Our culture has no time for this idea of loss. We want bigger, we want richer, we want healthier, we want happier. Everything must go up. It's assumed that if something isn't growing, if something isn't developing, if our economy isn't getting bigger, if we aren't becoming more successful in however we quantify that, that there must be something fundamentally wrong. And this is the kind of premise that we run. And so when loss comes along, when setback comes along, it feels like an alien invader interrupting our normal lives. Because normal is surely expansion and success and better and happier. Here's the shocking news. Actually, that isn't normal. That's a distorted situation. What happens in our society, because we have created these norms, is that we seek to either deny loss or we seek to medicate loss. One of the things that I find really disconcerting in terms of aspects of our society is that when somebody suffers a loss, and maybe a great big loss, they feel depressed. Now, actually, that's normal. You know, that's a normal, natural reaction to a significant loss in your life. You will feel confused. You'll feel cut off. You will feel potentially quite depressed and maybe hopeless. That isn't abnormal, but it's treated as if this condition is somehow a sickness. Here you are. You must be ill if you feel that, because surely that's not normal. So here's some medication that will help it make it feel better. You see, if you have a correlating response to actually something that's out there, then that isn't unusual. If somebody dies that you're very, very close to and you feel depressed, that's okay, because that's a normal reaction to that. In fact, I would actually say, if you don't feel things, that's an abnormal reaction. Yet our society seeks to deny this, seeks to get people to move on. You know, I suppose I grew up as part of that generation within our own society, which sort of adopts the attitude of just get over it. And probably certain people have different mentalities, but we have this just get over it kind of sense, and our society hates the sense of lack of control that grief brings with us. And we hate the feelings of depression or anger or sadness or doubts about God. And so we want to just immediately rush on from those situations and just get over it, just get on with our lives. And many times what happens is people take all of these emotions, they put them into a package, and they bury them deep in their psyche. And they sit there like unopened packages. And usually what happens is somewhere along the road, something happens. And this stuff breaks forth. Obviously, it's healthy to go through your teenage rebellion and do things at the right time in the right place. And it's less damage if you do it as a teenager than if you do it in your 40s or 50s. Let me just tell you that. But people often do these things that sit there like unexploded time bombs in their own psyches. As Christians, we're actually called to engage with loss, engage with brokenness. One of the things that we see in terms of Jesus' ministry and who Jesus is and in terms of Christianity is that it addresses the brokenness of our world. We talked last week about the incarnation, but the incarnation is God entering into the reality of fallen humanity. And recognizing that, and the stories of Jesus that we read in things like John's Gospels are the stories of Jesus engaging with brokenness. You see, the first thing that we learn in terms of this story is that there are no exceptions in terms of pain, loss, and brokenness. Some of us have lives that are slightly more blessed than others. And I find myself sitting with people, talking to them in terms of their losses and their experiences, maybe the Syrian refugees that are in our community now. And we would be thankful that our experiences are not those experiences of loss that they're undergoing. Yet, even in our blessed lives, we will know experiences of loss. We will know experiences of betrayal. We will know experiences of the pain of things changing. In this story, we see that as this occurs, as people experience the death of Lazarus, they turn to Jesus and they say, "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." Now, that's an interesting take, isn't it? If Jesus is there, then actually nothing should go wrong. We should not be experiencing this pain. We should not be experiencing this loss. We should not be knowing this situation, because Jesus surely would resolve all of these things. I think John wants to communicate here the first thing, that Jesus does not give us exemption from pain. Again, I visited Syria a few years ago, and I know, and we went to church in Aleppo, and we met with some of the Christians there, and it was a wonderful experience. And I know there are strong Christian communities in Syria, and there were strong Christian communities in Syria. But because they were Christians, it did not exempt them from the experiences that that community is now subject to. Christianity doesn't give us exemptions. All of us are going to experience two types of loss. Most of us will encounter what is sometimes called a devastating loss, maybe death of children, death of a parent, death of a loved one. Many of us may go through divorce. Some of us experience infertility. People experience betrayal. We experience events that redefine our life. Events that suddenly transform things from where we thought they should be to where we find ourselves. I was talking with someone who lost a limb in an accident. And a young teenage girl ends up in a fairground ride and ends up losing a limb. Devastating loss. And it causes them to redefine their life, to re-examine their life. All of us will experience devastating losses like that in our life. We also experience transitional losses. And this is when things in life move on. It's just the natural progression in our life cycles of leaving school, growing older, changes in your relational networks, changes in your influence and significance. You just find this. Interestingly enough, most people accept and acknowledge those devastational losses, and most people, especially middle-aged men, resist transitional losses. These are the areas where we usually deny anything is happening. One of the things I've reflected on is my experience as a parent, especially in relation to my daughter. And as a dad, you kind of look after your kid. She's grown up, you protect her, you know, you're her best friend, you do all the stuff you do. And then one day, she turns around and she kind of says, "Well, Dad, it's not really cool to hang out with you." And "What do you mean?" "And I want to go to the Blondie concert with my boyfriend and not you anymore." And you're like, "Wait a minute, hang on, I'm your dad, I need to come along to the Blondie concert." "No, I'm going with my boyfriend." "Yeah, you need to let go, Dad." And you're like, "Whoa, wait. And then you're suddenly in this scenario where you're having to think, how am I going to relate to my little girl? And she's celebrating her 26th birthday. And it's like, oh, and that's a big transition. I know mothers find the same in terms of their kids as they grow up and they leave home. And suddenly it's like, well, what does a mum do? I'm not being disparaging here, but I have seen some mums that do keep their kids a little bit dependent, a little bit too long. You know, I was talking to someone, and their son was 22 years of age, and they were still doing the washing for them. And I was like, really? Really? But some of us process transitional losses and find it harder to process this stuff. But the reality is that all of us will go through both devastating losses and transitional losses. Now, what Jesus does, and we see this in the story in verse 32, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping. He was deeply moved and troubled, and he says, "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied, and it says Jesus wept. Second thing that we see in this story is not only that nobody is exempt and that Jesus doesn't necessarily take away the pain of grieving and loss, is that Jesus faced the loss. He actually faced it and faced the reality. One of the things, as I say, our society does is it doesn't like to face loss. And as Christians, we can get into a sort of triumphalistic thing which wants to deny anything that is painful in our lives. I once heard a prosperity teacher teach in Holland that God doesn't want Christians in wheelchairs. And if you're in a wheelchair, well, that's contrary to the will of God for you. And you thought, what? And any state where you're not really happy, you're not really successful, you're not really prosperous, is contrary to the will of God for you. Now, I'll tell you, it's very appealing to think like that. It very much fits in with our kind of denial of any of this stuff. But it's not Christianity. You see, Christianity faces the reality of brokenness, faces the reality of the pain. It's interesting that Jesus, when he saw everybody weeping and his friends, Mary and Martha, weeping over the loss of the brother, and he was moved by that, he was touched by that. It tells us that he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. I think the suggestion in the Greek is that he was in some sense angry with what he was seeing. And so he says, I need to process this death. And he says, take me to the situation. I know some people where people have died very, very quickly. Again, a situation we had not that long ago in our own church context, where somebody died very quickly and the family hadn't seen them before they died. And there was a need to bring the body into the home and sit there with the coffin open and engage with the dead body. Now, again, a lot of our society goes, what are you doing? But actually, it was just a way of processing. Just, this person is now dead. Sometimes that's a necessary thing for people to do. Jesus faced the loss, and he responded to that loss. Shortest verse, I think, in the New Testament, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. He felt the pain of the loss and the reality of what was going on. I don't think that was pretend. We know the outcome in terms of the story of where Jesus was going with this, but I think it was Jesus was showing us that God enters into our brokenness and that we have to enter into our brokenness. And that sometimes we have to face the loss that we're going through. I think I said last week that when my father died, the very next morning, and the trauma of a bedside vigil, somebody dying, and then processing that, the very next morning I went to a meeting. And because somebody wanted to become a member of the church, I had it in my diary. God, but I may as well go and do it. And if I sat down with a therapist or a psychologist, they'd be saying, "What were you doing?" And they'd say, "Well, what you were doing was you were denying the reality that was actually happening around you because you couldn't process it." And as Christians, we need to learn, and we need to help one another sometimes with this. We need to face up to the reality of the losses in our lives. The third thing that we see then in this passage is that Jesus knew the place in between. Verse 36 and verse 37, we see various reactions. Some say he loved him, but some of them said, could not he have opened the eyes of the blind man, have kept this man from dying? People, different reactions that we see. And Jesus knew that place. That place where people are confused about what's happened, about why it's happened, where people are sort of holding on to the past, sort of asking the questions, can't things have been different? Well, at the same time saying there was real emotional connection there between the individual. Sometimes those in-between places are the hardest places to be. Sometimes we... And again, we find it very difficult with the lack of control, with the lack of sense, with the lack of meaning, with the lack of identity that these places bring. But sometimes we have to sit in those in-between places, wrestling with the question of how much we loved someone or something or some situation, and the harrowing idea of, couldn't I have changed it? Couldn't it have been different? Couldn't I have made a difference? Sometimes we actually have a sense of guilt in terms of loss because we process what could we do differently. And we begin to feel guilty because we think somehow we could have done something different. I wonder if Jesus was listening to these individuals saying, didn't he love him and couldn't he have healed him? Couldn't he have made a difference in this situation? If Jesus felt guilt, I always wonder what was going on in terms of Jesus as he hears these different reactions to that situation. Difficult place. Must have been tempting for Jesus to rush on to see resolution, to get out of there. It's tempting for us. But it's in those in-between places that we know Christ's presence. See, and I've talked about this before, but the difference between Christians and non-Christians is not that we don't go through stuff. Sometimes in evangelical preaching, we generated the idea that before you're a Christian, you're untogether, you're miserable, you're depressed, your life is broken, you're sick, and then you meet Jesus. And then you're together, you're happy, you're fulfilled, everything's great, you're healed. You ever heard those narratives? Problem is, if you've been a Christian for any length of time, you know they could be up in the Trades Description Act. Because it doesn't work like that. And actually, Christians have exactly the same problems, the same struggles, the same issues as everyone else. In fact, sometimes you think there are more of them in the church than elsewhere in society. The church sometimes feels more dysfunctional than the society around it. And it causes the question, what's the difference? What's the difference? Well, the difference is that Jesus is present in our brokenness if you're a Christian, and he's not if you aren't. You see, Christianity has the promise of Christ with us to the end of the age, the promise that Jesus is there in the midst of that pain and brokenness. And then, although it doesn't take away necessarily the pain and the brokenness, the presence of Christ is there walking it with us. Sometimes we don't feel it. Again, I know I've sat down with people who have suffered bereavements recently, and they say, I just don't feel God. I feel like there's a glass plate between me and heaven, and I just can't relate. And in those contexts, I say, you might not be feeling it, but the reality is Jesus is here with you, and he's walking it with you. And we tell one another those things so that we know the presence of Christ in the midst of it. And that's the difference. And in a sense, the Christian experiences the reality of sickness, and maybe you can contract cancer and you struggle with that, but that struggle is done nevertheless with Christ present in the midst of it. And it's just as confused. It's just as bitter. It's just as full of, how can I make sense of this? Yet Christ is there. And because Christ is there, it takes us to the fourth element in terms of our experience and loss. Is that there comes something that is transforming into that. See, Jesus, and we're told that verse 38, that Jesus was deeply moved, and so he came to the tomb, and it was a stone that was laid across the entrance, and he told them to take away the stone. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. And then Jesus said, did I tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. See, Christianity does not deny the reality of the brokenness of this world. And in one sense, we encourage people to face up to it and recognize it and confront it. We do affirm that Christ is present in the midst of that brokenness and in the midst of that loss. But we also say something else. We say that in the midst of that brokenness, in the midst of that loss, in the midst of the pain, no matter how great, there is always a sense of hope. You see, because we see that the fourth thing that Jesus does is he allows the old to birth the new. Jesus calls forth life from death. And sometimes in order for that to happen, we have to let go of the past. We have to let go of that thing that we loved, that thing that we hold on to, that thing that we yearn for, to be restored to us so that we can enter into a new future. Sometimes we see Martha saying, he's dead. and that's just the reality, and that's the reality we're now embracing. That's the reality that we're holding on to. And Jesus has to get her to say, actually, God can do something here that can change that reality. That actually you can move into a new future, and that Jesus brings hope in the midst of our despair. Jesus brings hope in the midst of our pain, in the midst of our brokenness. And that Jesus promises that we can move from an embracing of the past and the disappointments of the past and the pain of the past and the losses of the past into a new future that is defined by his presence and his work in our lives. And as we go through loss and grief, we don't rush that process. We don't hide from that process. But we go through that process with the knowledge that there is hope and that Christ brings forth life from death. That Christ can redefine and give us a new future as we release the past and we enter into that new reality that Christ has for us. Let's pray. Jesus, we come to you this morning, and most of us have experienced some form of loss. Lord, most of us know and have known some of those devastating losses that have caused us to redefine everything in our lives. We all know those transitional losses. They're just about the changes that occur in our lives. Lord, I pray that in the midst of these things, that we will not deny the brokenness and the pain, that we won't suppress that brokenness and that pain, and we won't hide from it. But Lord, help us to face that. Help us to embrace and know that loss. Help us to have space to grieve those losses, but also to recognize that in the midst of those losses and in the midst of that grieving, you are present. Lord, I pray that because of your presence, that we can have and know and not lose sight of the hope of a new future, of a future defined by your life-giving presence. Lord, a future that allows us to release the past and move into a new future. I ask for this for each one of us. In your name. Amen.